Okay, you're listening and watching the Podcastle, and we're back with Shark Week with our favorite guest of all time, Corey Ridings of the Ocean Conservancy. How are you, Corey?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you doing?
I am doing well. And you've been on the show a bunch of times. We always love to have you. And I just want to give a little background. Corey is the manager of fish conservation at Ocean Conservancy, as well as you currently hold a seat on the Pacific Fishery Management Council, which I'm telling you as if you didn't know this, Corey. I'm like, here's what you are. But for the listeners, you're on the Pacific Fishery Management Council, and what they do is manage fisheries on the West Coast. And that they're one of eight regional fishery management councils, which was established by Congress back in the 70s. And I encourage people to check them out. Their next meeting is September 8th through the 14th in Spokane, Washington. And you can find more information at pcouncil.org. So let's just start with that, because that's so cool. Tell us what you do on the Pacific Fishery Management Council, the PFMC.
PFMC, as we call it. Yes. Well, thanks for that introduction. And it's a great place to start. The Pacific Council manages the nation's federal fisheries off the coast of Washington, Oregon, and California. And the council is a legal advisory body that has sort of quasi-legislative structure and status. That makes most of the decisions about how our fisheries are managed. So that includes what to catch, how much to catch, who gets to catch it, what is it caught with, and is founded on the idea of science-based management. So using the science that the National Marine Fisheries Service produces, that our state governments produce, and try to make the best decisions to the overall benefit of the nation about how we manage our fisheries. So
that's so important to do. So yeah. if PFMC looked at, say there was like an area where there was some, there was a threat, there's maybe some unsustainable fishing going on, like some overfishing, you guys would recommend like submit a report basically to a legislative body that says like, hey, this needs to be regulated kind of thing, and they could actually pass like legislation, like they'll listen to you on what needs to happen kind of thing.
You're close, but not quite there.
Okay.
Usually what the council does, we'll consider scientific information about a species and look at that and go, oh my gosh, okay, we have either the stock is doing really well, this species is very healthy as set by the standards that we have decided, and we can figure out how to fish it. Or let's say something happens where the information comes back and it says, oh, wow, that looks like this is overfished. Scientifically, we have overfished this species. So according to the law, we have to redevelop a rebuilding plan and about how we can bring that species back to health. So the council moves through a lot of this, makes decisions. And then the National Marine Fisheries Service takes those decisions and recommendations and implements them.
It's so important, too, because without this, obviously, you need laws to regulate or else it would be a free fall. But really, like, because it's the West Coast and, you know, fishing is such a huge industry. I mean, you guys have to be like really busy with that, because isn't it very competitive, the fishing industry? And or is it not? I don't know. Is it like?
It is crazy, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, fishing is a very old industry and career. You know, people have been doing it for hundreds and thousands of years. The indigenous people that lived here before colonization have been fishing since time immemorial, which includes both subsistence fishing as well as commercial fishing. So it is one of humanity's oldest professions. And it connects us so deeply to the ocean, and fish and seafood protein that comes from the ocean is very healthy protein. So how we as a society decide to access that and who has the ability to harvest it, those are the kind of questions that the council and state governments and our federal governments deal with.
That's really interesting, because if you had, okay, so if there's like an indigenous population that historically would fish the same species, and all of a sudden like they can't anymore because it could be endangered or there's some sort of like other issue. Has that ever happened where that you kind of had to like ban a certain group from fishing a specific species of fish.
It happens all the time.
And they probably come back with like, well, this is our livelihood and this is how we survive. Like, how does one navigate around that? Because on one hand, I understand where people are coming from. You have to live and this is all you know. But on the other hand, not at the expense of extinction or, you know, hurting the ecosystem that way. Like, how does your group navigate through stuff like that?
That is a really great question. And it is the ultimate challenge and purpose of a council, is to figure out how do you balance these inherently competing outcomes, objectives, and goals. So where there be some people who, you know, really want to fish hard and care about catching fish today for very legitimate reasons. Whereas there's other people who don't want to fish. They don't eat fish. They see fish differently in their worldview or the cosmology. And for them, they don't want to see any fishing. And then there's kind of everyone in between in terms of, okay, how do we balance making sure that we have conservation and protection of our ocean, you know, of the
right.
fish, of the larger ecosystem that includes things like birds and mammals and habitats and corals and sponges and all that stuff, while maintaining ideally some sort of fishing that can go on to support communities, support cultures, and support the ability for us to eat this great protein. And
oh, yeah.
So these are really hard questions. So the council system is part of that solution, which is how do you bring people who are engaged and are stakeholders, or in the case of tribes, co-managers, and make those decisions as a nation to ensure that we are fishing the right amount. Now, of course, the right amount, you know, what is that?
What does that mean?
What does it actually mean?
Yeah.
Everybody has a different opinion about what that is.
Right.
But we have laws, you know, made by Congress that we implement that give us some guideposts about what that is supposed to be. So, for example, we think about like the Endangered Species Act, right? Mm-hmm. So sharks, which is, you know, the excitement why we're talking today.
Of course.
You know, if you have a shark species and it is endangered, there are certain levers that you have to push as a fishery manager to make sure that you're not further endangering those sharks. So that kind of law is one of the sideboards that we have to manage within and make decisions within.
And is it called bycatch when you're indirectly catching other fish? Would fishermen do that? Do you ever see, does that happen a lot where it's not so much bycatch and they're just kind of saying it is? They're like, oh, it was kind of an accident. Or like, is there a way to regulate that? Because I've been reading a lot of stories and articles from over the years, not anything too recent, but that's like a big problem in a lot of these places, is they're like indirectly like bringing up turtles and sharks and with their like catch. It's like, I don't know. Is there like a better way to do that they can do? Or do you guys have any like hand in that? Of like
Absolutely.
Letting them know.
Yeah, thinking about bycatch is something that fishery policymakers and fishery managers do all the time, and fishermen are thinking about all the time, every day while they're fishing. So people, and you know, bycatch, the word itself has a little bit of a negative connotation, but it's not actually bad. I mean, sometimes bycatch is other fish.
It does have a negative connotation. You're right.
I mean, in a lot of spaces, it is negative. For like you said, we don't. You know, fishermen are not going out trying to catch turtles, you know, and
right. If
you have turtle bycatch, that's a bad thing. So everybody's figuring out and asking themselves, okay, how can I minimize turtle bycatch? And we have laws, Endangered Species Acts, that, you know, legally limit the amount of bycatch that can be taken. And then you have technologies that can help with something like that. For example, turtle excluder devices, or TEDs, are used by many shrimp fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico so that they can keep fishing for shrimp, but they're not catching as many turtles. And this helps them avoid those really high levels of turtle bycatch. So folks at the National Marine Fisheries Service and at the states, in conjunction with fishermen, and a lot of cases, even NGOs, are working together to try to develop new technologies so that we can have less undesirable bycatch. In terms of how we're fishing. And so you can both keep fishing and protect species that may be at risk.
That's so important too. And you describe that like perfectly. Like, I encourage the listeners to look into this and kind of learn not so much like what you're eating, but like where it's coming from and what you're supporting, and you know, look at the sustainability factor. If, you know, you're ordering fish at a restaurant or a store, I mean, it's important to look at where it's coming from and what's being impacted by that. And most people, I would guess, especially in America, don't really like look at that stuff. And it's like, it's very important, you know, and you got to kind of take that into consideration. And you mentioned the National Fisheries Service. That was in, they're working on some legislation right now. Is this part of the equity and environmental justice strategy, or am I way off base here?
You are a little bit off base, but not totally.
Oh, I'm off base.
Thank you for bringing up
the strategy.
The National Fisheries Service, or NIMFS, also known as NOAA Fisheries, and NOAA being the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which all of this is in the Department of Commerce. NIMFS itself does not make any laws, but they do make the regulations to implement the laws. And they are the overseers of the council process that we've been discussing. So they manage our nation's fisheries. What were we saying? Sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
I could listen to you talk all day. I feel like you're so interesting. And when you speak at meetings and things like that, I'm sure you're very effective. You're a fantastic speaker. Should have your own podcast.
Can you tell my husband that? I'd like him to hear that.
Oh, I'm sure he knows. John and I were talking. We think your husband's probably like Aquaman or something like that, because you know so much about fish in the ocean that he's probably some sort of mythical seaman. But we don't know for a fact.
He teaches math.
Okay, that's cool. Even better.
Yeah, he's a math professor at Cabrillo College.
But we were talking about the equity and environmental justice strategy.
Oh, yes, thank you.
And I'm very like curious about this, because I feel like this is important.
Thanks for bringing that up. I'm sorry I lost the train there. So it's a strategy. So it is really just a document produced by the National Marine Fisheries Service. And they produced this in response to a couple executive orders that were done by Biden around thinking about equity and justice across our federal government. And they laid out a first ever strategy to try to help the agency move forward and think about its actions in the context of equity and environmental justice. So it's a really great document. It is certainly a start of a conversation. You know, it is not perfect. It does not contain all the things that it should contain, but it was really great to see NIMFS taking leadership and really saying they were going to meaningfully think about this and meaningfully pick this issue up as an agency. And put something out there for people to discuss. So they had this was a draft for a number of months. They got a lot of public comment. They put it out. And now it is out in the world for folks to engage with, think about. And it's a really great opportunity for like your listeners who are interested in equity and environmental justice. And as that pertains to fisheries, definitely take a look at the document. See what NOAA is doing around that work. See what opportunities there are. And try to engage with it. One great place to engage with it as you open this conversation is at a council meeting. It's a really good way to be engaged and involved with your government. And the councils in particular are going to be working on helping NIMFS with their regional plans for this strategy. So it's a national strategy, but there's going to be these regional implementation plans. One, it's just great that that's happening. And two,
that is great.
We really need people who care about sharks, who care about fisheries, who care about seafood, who care about their fishing communities to read this and give feedback, because that's exactly what the agency's hoping to get and what the council's hoping to get, because it makes us all better. So we have everything to gain by getting more people involved.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that too. And that's really important. And if you're watching the show, the link to that posted here in the description. And if you're listening, check out the link in the description as well. Make sure that those are in there. And because you think this whole this wouldn't have happened like 10 years ago, do you think that this beginning of this conversation, as you said, is because of the dichotomy of our culture has shifted to more of a inclusive, like we're talking about these things openly now, or is it just do you think it's just been a long time coming kind of thing? I guess my question is, this conversation, should this have happened like 10 years ago or something? Or is this something that's kind of newer that people are, that are on people's radars?
I think at least as it pertains to the council system and the National Marine Fisheries Service, this is new.
Okay.
This is a new topic for them. Certainly, justice and equity are inherent in fisheries management. So decisions that are being made every day in fisheries management have justice and equity angles to them. You know, who is fishing? Who is making this decision? Who are these decisions for? So it is, you know, throughout history, this has been something that has been part of fisheries. Tackling it directly, trying to explicitly acknowledge, understand, implement, and change the way that we manage based on a growing understanding of what equity and environmental justice in fisheries is, that is relatively new.
Yeah.
You know, you could make the case, and I have before, that under, actually it was Clinton had an executive order around environmental justice. And that
certainly gave the
agency latitude to do this work 10 years before.
Yeah.
But it wasn't getting done. And that's, you know, that's not really a political thing, because we've had political leadership on both sides of the aisle, you know, over since Clinton.
Right.
And no one's really moved on that. So it's great to see this happening. And I think it really bodes well for building a stronger system of fisheries management.
Oh, for sure. And let me, I know our like time's limited. I don't want to waste your time. I have so many more questions, but let me just touch base real quick on the, you said like, it's not a political thing, which, you know, it's not, but it's just that nobody really acting on it. Why is that? Is it because the government process is so welded and big? It's tough to like implement that, or were just people not caring? Like, because when you talk about Clinton, you're talking like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Why is it so slow? Is it because it's government?
Those are questions beyond my pay grade. Okay. You know, I
don't want to put you on the spot or anything. I'm an elected official, and I'll say it is the government's fault. And if you voted for Clark, it'll never happen. Sharks will have more rights than people, which my sister says. She's like, you know, if you were president, sharks would have more rights than people. And I said, they probably would. Same shark marriage.
It's really interesting to think about in terms of, as we try to consider more worldviews and build a government that's serving more people and providing freedoms to more people, there are certainly concepts of what are the rights that belong to other than humans, like sharks. You know, what do we as a species owe sharks as a species? And I certainly don't have the answer, but there are many people who have, you know, viewpoints and religions and worldviews around that, and something we're going to probably grapple with indefinitely as humans. But those dialogues are always really interesting to follow and hear how people are viewing their relationship to, you know, other species, and particularly species in the ocean, which, to your point, sharks, super charismatic, super interesting, these amazing aliens swimming in the ocean. And
that's the best description I've ever heard. Equity and justice in U.S. fisheries. This is something that's, you're an expert on. You are the expert on equity and justice in fisheries. And we're talking about this, and I know I'm mentioning a lot of broad strokes, but when you're talking about like equity and justice, that's something that's, it's a living evolution of things that are always changing. What are some of the like challenges that you're facing right now with this? I mean, is it like there's indigenous cultures that are suffering? Is it, are there bad legislation out there? Like what are some of the like issues facing that right now?
Well, first of all, you are definitely giving me a promotion.
Anxiety?
I am certainly not the expert. This is an area of interest for mine. I am studying this as part of my PhD work at University of Washington, but I am by no means the expert.
I love that you're studying that too for a PhD.
That's
so cool.
It's something that I've watched for years and been really interested in, and now I'm incredibly fortunate and
congratulations.
I go to school for it.
So. You're going to school in University of Washington, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. That is cool. All right, I'm sorry.
But thinking about that has been, you know, such a privilege and a pleasure. and thinking about it specifically within the context of fisheries, because fisheries is, you know, it's this little boutique. The world is big and fisheries are just a small part of what we think about. You know, some of the challenges that are really hit the nail on the head. You know, fisheries have been indigenous since time immemorial. And our West Coast fisheries and fisheries around the nation are not only important, like economically for tribal and indigenous folks, but they are part of the culture. They are part of the history. They are part of the identity of many tribes and indigenous folks up and down the West Coast, you know, from Puget Sound all the way to the Klamath, even south of there in this area. Seafood, harvest, shellfish culture, fishing was a large, significant part of these people's histories and still are.
Right.
So how those peoples and those tribes and those traditions are represented and how decisions are made that are inclusive of those folks and their needs is a huge issue, how we do
it
that.
Is.
And, you know, in the Pacific Council actually has a tribal seat, which none of the other seven councils have. But even beyond that representation, what does that mean in terms of outcomes for those folks?
Right. Like what kind of responsibility do we have for them? You know?
Yes. How do we engage? They are co-managers. We have government-to-government negotiations. How does that play out? What does that look like? How do we essentially atone for what we have done as being a colonizing government and envision a shared future together? So that is part of it. And certainly another thing about fisheries is just that, again, and why I love working in fisheries is fisheries are just, we're so connected to them as humans. You know, we eat the fish, we have them at dinner, we fish for them, we recreationally
fish for them. Included
we
everywhere.
We watch them, we keep them in tanks. Like, we love sharks. Like, it's a very strong connection in multiple levels between humans and fisheries. So when it comes to connecting with the ocean, I think that fisheries are the way that humans really interact with the ocean and have that like deep molecular actually connection with the ocean.
Yeah. That touch right there that you can, you know, it's tangible and it's included all around you. It's everywhere.
It's really part of us for many, many people, especially those that live on or near the coast. So thinking about equity, environmental justice is who gets to have those experiences, you know, who's making the decisions, you know, who does this benefit and how does it benefit them? How do we make sure as a government and as a society that we are thinking about how those are distributed? And, you know, those are not easy answers, but they are the types of things and they're the types of questions we should be asking. And in terms of, you mentioned legislation, you know, making sure our national laws, which are, you know, our highest organizing principles, how those are good. Are they good enough right now? If not, what could be changed? And ultimately, it's ongoing. This is not work that's finished. You know, this is something that we commit to every day or every meeting and see if we can't be doing a better job.
I love that you're there and that you guys are doing such great work. I really do. And everything and things change all the time, you know, legislation and everything. Do you think we're, and this isn't a political question, but do you think just as we are as a country and society right now, it's a good time to strike in terms of like, you know, changing legislation and educating people like, or do we have a long way to go? And I ask this because, well, I'll get to that in a second, but like, it's kind of a broad question, but I guess I'm asking, are we there yet with like, we can get to where we need to be as far as sustainability and education and what we need to do, or are we not there yet as a country or as a people? I should say,
because
I don't think
we
are.
No, I don't think we're there. I think fisheries is a great example of an issue that can bring people together. If we're talking about sort of the separation that we have in the country right now, the political separation, the cultural separation, fisheries is really a bipartisan issue. It falls, at least in Congress, it falls often along geographic lines. You know, you have coastal members versus inland members, or members from this region versus members of that region. So, and of course, there's always going to be party politics that are going to dictate, you know, and be the landscape for how these issues play out. But fisheries right. impacts a lot of people. It doesn't matter what party you're part of. And ultimately, it's, you know, about having healthy communities. And there's going to be arguments about how that happens.
Right.
But I think it's a great opportunity to bring more people together as opposed to keeping people separate and trying to divide them.
That was the quote of the week right there. We always talk about on our show, like, who gave the best quote on one of our shows? And that was so it kind. Right there, Corey. That was it. Okay, let me ask you two more questions, please. And then I know you're very busy and important. And I'm just a poor radio show guy here in Los Angeles. But I got to ask you this, because you have a good hand on the pulse. So sharks, obviously, there's been a lot of good legislation. And I know the European Union and the shark finning ban and everything going on. There's been a lot of progress. But how can we, are we going to get to a point where whenever, I guess we stop victimizing and being so fearful of sharks publicly. Mm-hmm. I know Jaws didn't do us any favors. I know Peter Benchley and Spielberg regret it. And I know that was a really big problem, but it's like everywhere, anytime in the news, there's a shark. It makes headlines that's like, man attacked by shark. And, you know, now I read the governor Hochul in New York is deploying drones to get the shark problem. It's like, there's no shark problem of them. That's their home. Are we ever going to get to a point where we can like move on from this fear of sharks? Because you don't need to be afraid of them. I mean, you don't.
No.
Where people die from vending machines. Like,
wait, is really? That true? More people die from vending machines
falling on them than sharks.
That's amazing. Thank you for educating me. That's a great fact.
It's just so dumb that every time there was one in Florida or Bahamas recently, and the guy was on a boat and there was bull sharks, and they said, don't put your hand in there. He's like, oh, I'm just going to do it for like 2 seconds. And he got bit. It's like, well, I don't want to put my hand in, you know, like a meat grinder for a second. I mean, something might happen, but the news runs with it like, oh, shark bite, you know, clickbait. And are we ever going to get to a point where we can move past this, or are we just stuck there?
I mean, I hope so, but I don't know.
It's just,
they're just such gorgeous creatures, and they're so, I mean, just how they exist. I think humans are always going to be, because we are the ultimate predator. You know, mm-hmm. we are the super predator.
100%. Yeah.
And how we relate to other sort of top predators, I think is always really fascinating. And there's probably something, you know, deeply biological, a little bit about our obsession with these, even though we are, you know, as you pointed out, at zero risk from these predators. You know, our fascination with them, I think, is probably from a deeper place in our brain. And also just, again, going back to that kind of like animal, you look at a shark and you learn about a shark, or you look at a tiger and you think about a tiger, and they're just incredible. You know,
right. They're so majestic
in this beautiful world. And they're like, I think we're somewhat in awe of them. And so we have this obsession with sharks, and I don't know how to move it past the dialogue of fear and back to that place of awe, but maybe we'll get there.
I hope so. It's just so funny what we pick to be afraid of and what we choose not to. I mean, take away all the movies and all the fear and whatever, and you just look at a shark. I mean, they're majestic, these aliens of the sea, like just to watch them. I mean, it's like, why do we decide, I don't know, this might be a big example, but like a squirrel and a rat are not too dissimilar. But most people will be like, oh, the squirrel's cute. No, it's a rat. And I'm like, yeah, they're really in their own. They're both kind of cute and interesting. And it's that we just, we label things so easily and it just sticks there.
Yeah. So, but like westernized dichotomous thinking is not helpful for building a more peaceful relationship with sharks.
No, not at all. We need to move past that and respect them. You know, it doesn't mean we have to like swim with them and turn them into a show. Just let them be, enjoy, and respect them. It's their home too.
Yeah. Speaking of human interactions with predators, did you happen to see any of the news the last couple of days about the surfing otter we have here in Santa Cruz?
What?
Yes.
No.
Exactly.
Surfing otter? Because I was going to ask you if you're still surfing these days.
I'm not doing a ton of it, unfortunately, just with my working and schooling schedule. But there is surfing otter who is taken over the local surf break, and apparently has lost this fear of, yes, is that it?
Well, of course there's an ad, but yeah. it's the surfing otter is sending humans a warning.
Yes. Yeah, so there she is. Yeah, she's taking down the Costco surfboard and she's going to take a bite.
Oh my gosh.
It's pretty fascinating.
Like, what is this otter doing though? Like, what is, aside from surfing, is, or is she or he curious, or?
I don't think people know yet. It's of course unusual behavior. You know, there aren't a lot of surfing otters out there.
No. Yeah. I mean, not a lot. Not
kind of makes me happy just to think she enjoys just like screwing with people.
Doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, oh, you're going to put this like big bright thing in my kelp bed.
Is that
I'm
a Costco
come hang
surfboard?
Out for a while.
Is it a Costco surfboard?
Oh yeah.
You can tell, right? Cause you're a surfer.
You can tell.
Yeah. Are those like, is that a bad surfboard? Is that like driving a like 1987 Ford Festiva where you're like, oh.
No, I mean, they're foam boards.
They're crap. Oh, they're foam. Oh,
they're
like
foam.
They're crap.
And so, but they're fun to ride sometimes. So I don't blame people who are riding those boards. And sometimes they're nice for the kind of waves we get here. And they're certainly good for beginners. So yes, but apparently she really likes those boards.
That's she loves those boards.
She's into them.
Aren't otters adorable though? I mean, they really are. They're so
really
cool.
Cute. I know.
All right. Well, that'll be your time. I wasted enough of your time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And I do want to remind people to donate to Ocean Conservancy. Obviously, go to them at oceanconservancy.org. Twitter, follow them at ourocean, and Instagram at Ocean Conservancy. And check out the latest edition of Splash, because there's a cool article in there about a green shark. Am I saying that right? Was it a green shark? I think it was. It was 400 years old, they said, or 350. So cool. By the time the shark was reaching adult maturity, we were having our war on independence against England in the 1700s. So there's a majestic beast somewhere around, I think, Greenland, the Greenland shark, that's still alive from that time. If that doesn't blow your mind, I don't know what will. I really don't. It blows my mind. But that was in Splash.
So cool.
You guys have such awesome marketing tools for people that support you. And I just thank you again, Corey. And please keep up the great work.
Thank you so much for having me and for loving the sharks and spreading the good word about loving sharks.
So. We love them.